Hey there, welcome to the Up North Lowdown from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Ed Ronco. Thanks for joining us. Here in northern Michigan, March is typically maple syrup season. It is a time of year when daytime highs go above freezing, but the nights stay cold. Not so much this year, though. A mild winter meant many people began tapping their trees unusually early, in January and February, and others, like the Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians, took the warmer weather as a sign to let their sugar maples rest. Here's IPR environment reporter Ellie Katz.
Tara John is gathering kindling for a fire outside the Grand Traverse Band Sugar Shack in Peshawe Town. Off in the distance, we can barely hear the sound of a woodpecker.
That woodpecker is saying that those bugs are underneath the bark are starting to wake up.
John is a tribal member and works with the band's agriculture department on restoring traditional foodways and food sovereignty. She says the sound of woodpeckers are just one of many ecological signs that the trees are waking up again, that it's time to gather for sugarbush.
We are coming back to this forest, to this grove, to these maples. We call them Mininatig, and that's us, our standing brother, our elder brother.
Tapping trees for maple sap, syrup, and sugar is an old Anishinaabe tradition, one that John and the tribe are working to strengthen after generations of settlement made it harder to practice and pass down.
The beginning of the year is sugar bush. When we report for sugar bush, that's like we check in with our family, get the good gossip, we laugh together, you know, argue, yell at nieces, nephews, you know, everything that families do.
The sugar maples provide that, she says. But the signs to return and tap the trees came too early to Peshawe Town this year, or didn't come at all. Woodpeckers and baby skunks started appearing in January, and the snow didn't come all the way up to the trunks of the trees.
And that was a red flag for me. And I asked my elders about what to do and what to say, and asked the trees, because they have not been respected or appropriately thanked or allowed to rest for quite a long time.
With that input, she decided the Grand Traverse Band's agriculture department would let the trees rest and then hopefully tap next year. And they're not alone in that choice. Several other tribes, like the Sault Ste. Marie tribe and the Saginaw Chippewa, are doing the same. Kathleen Smith works for the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, which represents 11 Ojibwe tribes in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan.
My title is an Ojibwe Mowin, which is Gunawingdung Manomin, she who takes care of the wild rice.
Smith does a lot of work with traditional foods in the Upper Great Lakes, and she says some places are moving ahead with maple sugaring.
The areas where I have harvested and helped, you know, the sugar bushes, they're doing quite well, so they were offering themselves up.
Smith is a member of the Keweenaw Bay Indian community and talking to us on the phone from Baraga. She's helped out with sugarbush in a few places in the UP and northern Wisconsin this year. They've had heavy snowpack and good weather for harvesting. But she says warming winters, plus challenges like disease and pests, mean it will become more and more important for tribal communities across the Great Lakes to talk with each other and keep rebuilding foodways and traditions.
So for instance, like the black ash, the emerald ash borer, we had relatives downstate that were asking, you know, us for black ash since we didn't have that yet, and to be able to do a trade, right? So I think it's important that the communities that still have, you know, the sap still running, you know, maybe we could trade for something later on, because we need to bring that back. We need to be able to help our relatives out as well, you know, that weren't able to do sugarbush.
That's sort of what's happening back at the sugar shack in Peshawe Town. Tara John pulls out a few bottles of maple syrup harvested nearby that she was able to trade for. She pours the liquid into a cast iron pot over the fire and starts stirring.
I'm boiling it down. I'm going to sugar this.
After several hours of careful stirring, the syrup will thicken, eventually reducing down to a granular, golden brown sugar. John has led a few sugarbush workshops like this one to teach tribal and non-tribal community members about the tradition. And the band's agriculture department says they're aiming to tap 600 trees next year, up from around 300 last year. They've invested in new equipment and home tree tapping kits to give out to families, thanks in part to a big grant aimed at reinvigorating tribal food traditions. Later in the afternoon, the sun comes out, and more people have joined around the fire. John says this, showing up to Sugarbush with intention. Being outside the sugar shack and near the Inanatigug, the sugar maples, is vital during this year of rest for the people and the trees.
This is what I'm intending for them. And to occupy this space throughout the year to host workshops or harvesting or teachings, storytellings right here so that we can live life with these guys. They miss our laughter and our arguing and our kids running around. And they're supposed to be part of our lives. And we're coming back. We'll learn how.
IPR's Ellie Katz with that story. The Great Lakes are full of stories, and we are exploring some of them in a new segment you can hear on Morning Edition, only on Interlochen Public Radio. We call it, and I love this name, we call it Maritime Time. It's about 90 seconds, and we would love for you to hear the first episode right now.
Rise and shine, it's Maritime Time, our quick weekly look at life on the Great Lakes. Michigan has the most lighthouses in the United States. There's 129 of these things statewide. At the tip of the old Mission Peninsula is the Mission Point Lighthouse. Seven different people served as lighthouse keepers in its heyday. Only one of those was a woman. Sarah Lane and her husband John took over in 1881. They worked as a unit, watching ships, keeping the light burning, and caring for the grounds. John fell ill and died in 1906. That's when Sarah became the active keeper. She continued that critical work until spring of 1907. The Lanes are buried in Monroe, Michigan. Her grave is unmarked, but that's going to change. The Historical Society will get her a gravestone, which will be marked this summer. The lighthouse is no longer in service for seafarers, but its rich history is preserved and brings in thousands of people to the shores of the Great Lakes. That's this week's Maritime Time here on Interlochen Public Radio. Have a story we should share? Let us know at iprnews.org.
And as Tyler said, if you have stories about life on the Great Lakes that you think we should explore, let us know. It can be something from history, maybe a current issue facing the Great Lakes, or anything in between. Info on how to reach out to us is at interlochenpublicradio.org/talk. We'll be right back.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
A deer hunter is out in the woods, strapped in a tree stand. Then, out of the corner of his eye, he sees something move. But it's not a trophy buck. It's a mountain lion.
The cat began literally creeping up to him, staying low to the ground, tail switching back and forth as it locked eyes on him. That was when he began fearing for his life.
This hunter was being hunted by a cougar in the Great Lakes region. That's next time on Points North. That episode of Points North is available now. Listen to it wherever you find podcasts.
Welcome back to the Up North Lowdown. I'm Ed Ronco. Let's find out what else made news this week in Michigan. Plans are moving forward in Petoskey to build more than 200 apartments at the site of an old factory. But first, it needs to be cleaned up. The former Michigan Maple Block factory made butcher blocks and other wood products until it shut down during the pandemic. The site was recently purchased by Great Lakes Capital, a private developer based in Indiana. The project is possible in part because of a new law, the Brownfield Redevelopment Financing Act, passed by Michigan lawmakers last summer. It basically gives money if developers build apartments on former industrial sites. So the factory will be demolished in April and then cleaned up, and then the apartments could be in place by the spring of 2026. A new drug disposal box is available in Central Lake in Antrim County. In addition to it being a way for people to get rid of unneeded pharmaceuticals, it's also a way to protect Michigan's waterways and the Great Lakes. Jennifer McKay with the Tip of the Mitt Watershed Council says when people dump their meds down the drain, they end up affecting aquatic animals. And we still don't know if there's an impact on humans. The hope is to provide people with a safe way to get rid of prescription meds, but also to change habits in a way that helps the environment. There are sites to do this all over the place. We have a map at iprnews.org. Local governments in Michigan could soon have more say in speed limits. Right now, cities and counties are required by law to set speed limits based on what they call observed driving habits. And sometimes that forces them to raise speeds when they were actually hoping to lower them. The Michigan legislature has approved a bill that would let cities and counties lower speed limits if speeding could present a threat to public safety. Governor Whitmer is expected to sign that bill. And that's it for this week's Up North Lowdown. We had contributions from Ellie Katz, Michael Livingston, and Tyler Thompson. Music is by Blue Dot Sessions. Our show is produced by Max Copeland. I'm Ed Ronco, and we make this podcast at Interlochen Public Radio. Next week is a special week for us. Max and I will be co-hosting the episode. You'll have to listen next week to find out why. And for our sonic send-off this week, we decided we would take you to the Sioux Locks. This is, if you don't already know, this is an incredibly crucial piece of infrastructure on the Great Lakes, helping ships travel between Lake Superior and Lake Huron. The locks opened last weekend, Friday, March 22nd, for this year's shipping season. And that opening came a few days early at the urging of steel companies dealing with materials shortages. A warm winter helped. The vessel Joseph L. Block was the first one to make its way through the locks, heading from Lake Huron into Lake Superior. Here are some sounds of that, recorded by onlooker Bob Mikon and IPR's Michael Livingston. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.
This week's show, we'll hear music from the original soundtrack to Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, a dazzling orchestral score that pays loving homage to classic series themes while expanding the entire musical scope of the Star Wars universe. I'm Keith Brown. Join me for music from Jedi Fallen Order this week on Gameplay. You can stream full episodes of Gameplay on demand and view playlists at gameplayshow.org.